Greetings and welcome to Don't Call It Jazz, KISU's very own listening hang from a jazz musician's point of view. I'm your host, Jonathan Armstrong. I'm a jazz professor here at Idaho State University, as well as a professional jazz musician, saxophonist, and composer. And it is on that note that I'm actually going to take tonight's show to go over my career as a recording artist. And the reason that I'm doing this, and I admit that it's a little uncomfortable for me to just focus on myself for an entire hour, feels like a bit of a weird use of my show. However, I did just release my third album as a band leader, Reabsorb, which was released on October 2nd, which is the day before this broadcast, on October 3rd, and it feels even stranger to not discuss that. So I've had a relationship with a Los Angeles-based record label, Arenda Records, since 2014 when they released my debut album, a large ensemble record called Farewell. I released another album with them in 2016, and here I am with my third album for Sextet called Reabsorb, which I'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But I thought a decent use of this program would be to just play some recordings that I've done under my name, under different ensembles' names, and just on cool records that I've done throughout my life, just to sort of introduce the things that I do on the saxophone and the things that I did back in LA before I moved here to Idaho. And the kind of scene that I'm trying to build here at Idaho State University with our jazz program and commercial music ensembles and all the cool stuff that's happening here in the ISU music department. So to kick off the show, I'm going to play something that I recorded in Los Angeles in 2019. And this is for an octet, but it's a strange octet. And I called this project Gathering at the Juniper Grove. And the concept behind this project is thinking about what musicians are to our communities. Meaning, so often when you go to music school and you go and you be a professional musician, we constantly think of the economics of being a musician because you have to. You have to pay rent. You have to buy food and pay the bills. And so you're always thinking of ways to market yourself. But I always had this thing stuck in the back of my head. And then you start reading books and hanging out with ethnomusicologists. And I always had this thing in the back of my head that's like, what is the ideal relationship a musician has with their community? And it seems like studying the history of our people being musicians in all cultures around the world, musicians are always the ones that are celebrating great moments of our communities, great moments of our tribes. There's music at weddings, there's music at funerals, there's music during harvest time, and all these kinds of really important seminal events for any community. And it doesn't matter if that community is 2020 era Pocatello or 2000 BC era, you know, Oklahoma with Native Americans or Eastern Europe or India or whatever. There's this sort of common element when you start to do the research of how musicians brought their community along to celebrate the different seasons and the different feasts and all the different really important elements of a community, you know. And so I went to my wife, and who's a wonderful poet, Erin Armstrong, and I asked her if she could write a few poems that could celebrate certain elements of this kind of fake community that I came up with in my head, this sort of imagined, almost like post-apocalyptic community ensemble. And as you can hear in the recording I'm going to play, it's a really strange instrumentation. You got cymbalum, which is this Romanian hammer dulcimer instrument. You got electric guitar, you have cello, percussion, drum set, trombone, clarinet, myself on saxophone. And this song that I'm going to play from this project, Gathering at the Juniper Grove, is called Parade Parade. And the poem that Erin wrote is meant to be like a celebration of people coming back from the hunt or the harvest. And there's this giant parade, like maybe some kind of a fall festival. And the poem is Parade Parade, mass costume, hay. Animal moving doors, onions like a string, wildly put away chores. Grim slants the sky and November cleaning tools. Store story and a barrel of beer. It's long loops before the winds don't blow. And I took that rhythm. I just loved that so much. And then I wrote this song to it in 5/8 that's called Parade Parade. So I hope you enjoy Parade Parade off my 2020 release, Gathering at the Juniper Grove. Welcome back to Don't Call It Jazz. This is your host, Jonathan Armstrong. And for tonight's show, I'm going to be playing music that I've recorded throughout my career as a jazz saxophonist and composer. And that last song you heard is off the 2018 album Movement by Kobe Watkins and the Kobe Watkins Groupet. Kobe Watkins is this just absolutely brilliant jazz drummer and composer who lives in North Carolina, yet he teaches adjunct at BYUI up in Rexburg. When I moved here to Idaho in 2015, I hooked up with him and some other great musicians up there, and I've been performing and touring and recording with Kobe ever since. And this is our debut album as the Groupet, released in 2018, and that's his composition, MBDC, which he admits he forgot what it stood for. But it's a really great composition. Man, Kobe's such a wonderful writer, and it's been an absolute joy and an honor to perform with him and bring his music to life. Done a lot of really memorable gigs with the guy, including a orchestral show that Kobe and I arranged the music, his music for orchestra back in the February of 2019, I believe, or maybe it was 2018. Who knows what time is anymore. Moving on, I'm going to play something from my second album as a band leader, 2016 release, Burnt Hibiscus, also on Arenda Records, which is this record label in LA. And this album, Burnt Hibiscus, was a partnership, a collaboration between myself and the brilliant vocalist and multi-instrumentalist Sheila Bringy. Sheila Bringy is an Indian-American artist and musician from Colorado, and she currently is back there in Boulder teaching at Naropa University. And I had known her for some time, and I had played in her ensembles throughout Los Angeles, and we just really enjoyed playing music together. And so I approached her for what a collaboration would look like between us. And so I did some studying of traditional Indian ragas, and we worked together on them, and she taught me a ton about different ways that you can approach rags. And I took my old Indian raga book out from grad school when I got to study Indian Sargam, which is Indian melodies and ragas, with the great Ashish Khan at California Institute of the Arts. And I went to my wife and I asked her to write some poetry, and this will be a theme. I really love working with my wife, and not only do I love her as a human being, but she's just a wonderful writer and poet and just an incredibly unique and expressive person. And so, at the time we were living in Los Angeles and we were just starting to kind of get to the end of our rope on what it was like to live in that city. I mean, both of us had multiple jobs. We were driving all over the city, driving 400 or 500 miles a week. It's pretty intense to live there. And as beautiful as it is with all the incredible musicians, it's also just a real tough sledding. And so Erin, my wife, wrote a bunch of poetry that kind of speaks to this intensity and surreal element and quality of living in Los Angeles. And in fact, some of these poems she wrote at 3:15 a.m., where she would set her alarm to wake herself up at 3:15. So she would wake up and grab a journal and just write stuff down. So there's this real kind of surreal quality, especially to those poems. And this one's no different, that you're going to hear, called The Earth Slides Slowly. So I took her poems and then I attached a different raga that felt appropriate to each poem, and then I composed based on the raga. And I'm not trying to compose an Indian record specifically, but the idea was to kind of combine these two elements and then just sort of see where the music would go. And I wrote for a 10-piece ensemble, which, as you'll hear, is a unique ensemble. You got tuba, trumpet, trombone, clarinet, flutes, saxophones, and then Sheila, who not only sings but plays harmonium and bansuri flute and Celtic harp, and I'm also playing some guitar on some of it. Then you have drum set and percussion. So certainly a unique band, and that brings all of these really interesting poems and ragas to life. So you're going to hear Sheila sing on this record, on this particular song, and actually you're going to hear the great alto saxophonist Gavin Templeton just absolutely tear it to shreds. So this is The Earth Slides Slowly from my 2016 album, Burnt Hibiscus. Enjoy. Oh, Welcome back to Don't Call It Jazz. I'm your host, John Armstrong. And for tonight's show, kind of a unique thing, I'm actually taking the opportunity to play music from my recording career and my past as a professional musician. And the reason I'm doing that is on October 2nd, just yesterday, if you're listening to this broadcast on October 3rd, I released my third album as a leader with the Arenda Records, which is a Los Angeles-based record label. To sort of celebrate and honor my third recording, I'm playing music by me. So as awkward as it feels to do this, I think it's actually kind of cool, you know, for a lot of you that just know my disembodied voice playing a bunch of fun recordings that I love. This is a cool opportunity for me to show that I am also an artist and I do a lot of this stuff professionally. So I'll get to music from this new recording that I have a little bit later, but what you just heard is a composition, original composition of mine called At a Prehistoric Town Hall Meeting, which is kind of self-explanatory. I just created this sort of raucous melody with a kind of a crazy rhythm that just sort of spins out of control, and it felt like a bunch of people arguing at some kind of prehistoric town hall meeting. This recording was done with a quartet that I co-founded. It's a collective quartet called Slum Gum. We've been together since 2006, if you'll believe it. And this is our 2016 album, 123 Astronaut Onizuku Street. And 123 Astronaut Onizuka Street is in Los Angeles, and our very favorite jazz club called the Blue Whale is located on that street, and we recorded this live at the Blue Whale. Moving on, I'm going to play something off my 2014 debut album off of Arenda Records, and this is a ballad I wrote called Fool of Me, and the title comes from a Waylon Jennings song. You know what? I forgot the name of the song. But in the song, Freedom, Low Down Freedom, You've Done Cost Me Everything I Ever Lose. I'm a big country fan. I really love old school country, and Waylon Jennings just absolutely sings to my heart. And I've always loved this song. And in the song, he sings this line, I made a fool of love before it made a fool of me. And I just thought that was a really beautiful sentiment. And especially at the time, it really struck me. It really resonated with me. So I wrote this song, this ballad based on that. And then as you'll hear, this is a really expansive big band. You got five trumpets, four trombones, a tuba, five saxophonists who all double on flutes and clarinets, full rhythm section with percussionists as well. And for most of this debut album, I wrote five compositions for this album with this 22-piece ensemble. And for this one, I'm playing saxophone. For the rest of it, I'm conducting. But this is a feature that I wrote for myself. So you'll hear me play an intro cadenza, and then you're going to hear me play the solo throughout. So this is 2014 album Farewell. The song is called Fool of Me. And if you like any of this music, you want to check out more of it, it's super easy to find on my professional website, which is johnarmstrongmusic.com. I hope you enjoy Fool of Me from 2014 album Farewell. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Don't Call It Jazz. I am your host, Jonathan Armstrong. And for tonight's show, I am going through my own personal recording career and my catalog and playing you some different stuff that I recorded under my name and other people's names. And the reason I'm doing this is I just released my third album on October 2nd, an album for Sextet called Reabsorb, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So in a way to honor my third album, celebrate it a little bit, I'm using tonight's show to go through my career and just play a couple of choice cuts from the things that I've recorded throughout my life as a musician. Because a lot of you know me, you know my voice, you know this show, but maybe you don't know the stuff that I've done in my professional career. So this is a way for me to introduce that part of myself. The thing you just heard, bit of a left turn from everything else, it's called One Note Samba. It's a great jazz standard, and it's off a 2015 album called La Fiesta with the Mike Barone Big Band. I started playing in Mike Barone's Big Band in Los Angeles in 2013, 2012, maybe even 2011. Probably should have got my facts straight. There's this culture in Los Angeles that's really fascinating and hard to explain unless you're there with professional jazz musicians, and it's this musicians union culture. So if you ever go to the musicians union, it used to be in Hollywood, and after I moved in 2015 here, they moved it to Burbank. There's big bands that rehearse all hours of the day. If you just show up to the musicians union in Los Angeles in Burbank, if you're ever there, if we ever get to travel... You just show up. There's some outstanding big band that's going to be rehearsing at 10 a.m., at 12:30 p.m., at 2 p.m., at 5, at 7, and just some of the best musicians in town are using this as an opportunity to kind of cut their teeth, hang out with each other, meet each other, talk at the water cooler. And I heard about Mike Barone's band that was rehearsing, and I went to one of their shows. In fact, a good friend of mine was playing bass in their band, and he was looking for a sub to play tenor saxophone. So he called me in to play a couple rehearsals, and then eventually he gave me the lead tenor spot in this Mike Barone band, which was just such an honor. It's a chair that used to be held by Ernie Watts, which is just an outstanding tenor saxophone player and a hero of mine as a kid. So I got to inherit Ernie Watts's chair in the Mike Barone band. Well, Mike Barone, he's in his 80s now, but back in the 1960s, he was the main arranger and composer for the jazz ensemble that played, the big band that played for the Johnny Carson Tonight Show. So obviously Doc Severinsen was the band leader, but Doc Severinsen didn't write all those charts. Mike Barone wrote the bulk of those charts. Certainly other people did as well. And that was his main gig. He had his own big band in the 1970s called the Mike Barone Big Band. He kind of left LA for a while and he came back in the maybe the 80s or the 90s. And then he started his big band again and he just kept writing. In fact, he's still writing to this day. So I got to sit in that lead tenor chair, and every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., I would get up, drive from my house in Altadena, way up in the San Gabriel Mountains by the Rose Bowl, and I'd drive down to Hollywood. It took me about an hour and change with my saxophone, my tenor sax, my soprano sax, my clarinet, my flute. And I would show up and we'd play from 10 a.m. to 12:30 every Tuesday morning. We'd play roughly 2 to 3 gigs a year. And then I got to record 2 records with him of all original arrangements and compositions. I just love Mike's writing so much. And I love Mike as a man as well. Just a really wonderful guy. It was great to hang out with him all that time. Just a total legend. And I so admired his charts. And in fact, my decision to record a big band album was very much influenced by all the time I got to spend inside of his music that he played, that he wrote. I just loved all the stuff that he wrote. And when you're inside of the band, it's a different experience than when you're listening just to the band. Because when you're inside of it, you really get to hear every single intricacy, and it's so beautiful. And his intricacies were always so outstanding and so fun to listen to. So that's a solo I took on one of the songs off of La Fiesta. The other album I recorded with him is called Birdland, and we play a bunch of great recording arrangements on that. And in fact, he just released a new album that I'm not on because I live in Idaho that's so good, called Brazil, that actually it's in my CD player right now and I've been listening to quite a bit. So Mike Barone, just an absolute joy to play with that guy. All right, so to close the show, as I said, this is my third album as a band leader. I appreciate you listening, lending me your ears to all this music that I've recorded throughout my life. Some of it's pretty strange, some of it's pretty wild, but that's just the stuff that I hear in my head, and this is no different. So this new album, Reabsorb, it's influenced by a few things in my life. I had a daughter just a couple years ago, and the second I held her, she's 2 minutes old, she's 20 seconds old at this point, and I held her and I had this instant realization, and I know this is going to sound intense, and it's a bit intense, but to me, it's beautiful. I held her and I just realized I was going to die. I just realized I could like feel my own mortality, and it was beautiful. And what I mean by that is when I held my daughter, I realized that she's here to replace me. She's here to improve on me. And all the things that I've inherited in my life, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, it's like that stuff has to die for a healthy organism, this humanity organism, for us to thrive, we have to die. And that's a beautiful thing. Mortality is built into the whole code. It's built into the whole evolution of our species. And I never thought about it as deeply as when I held my daughter at 2 minutes old. And it just absolutely floored me. And at the time, I was also reading this really wonderful Ursula K. Le Guin book called The Farthest Shore, which also deals with death and fear of death and what that means and what mortality means. It's a really beautiful book. And I was also practicing meditation with the Portnoy Sangha here in town with my wonderful teachers, Tony and Paula. And that incredible community of the Sangha. And when you meditate and you're mindful and you read Thich Nhat Hanh and you're reading Buddhist literature, in fact, I was born Buddhist, so I've been reading Buddhist literature a lot my whole life. And then you have this moment with your child and you read this book by Ursula K. Le Guin and then also just conversations with my wife. This idea of mortality as a graceful thing, as a beautiful thing, as a thing to embrace so that we don't do terrible things to each other. You know what I mean? Like when we start to fear our own mortality, when we start to fear our own death and we run away from that, that's when we start to do terrible things because we have this desperation and this weakness and this kind of this grasping of our life that actually should be released. There's this thing that we have to understand that the whole thing's much larger than us. We're such a small part of this infinitely beautiful ecosystem. So I wanted to make a record, and I specifically wanted to make a vinyl record. I've been, I'm a jazz geek. I'm a record geek. I've been collecting records since before it was cool. Back in 1999, when I was in high school, I was collecting records in Portland. So I have this bizarre, like, I don't know, maybe I have 400 records, 500 records that I've collected over my life. And there's certain old school jazz records like by Keith Jarrett or Pharoah Sanders that are just two songs, one song on the front side and one song on the back side. And it's such a unique, beautiful listening experience. And I've always wanted to create something like that. And when I had this realization about this epiphany about my own mortality, I thought this is the perfect medium for that. So in fact, this album, Reabsorb, it's meant to be listened to on vinyl. Obviously, not everyone has a vinyl record player. So it's also on CD and you can also listen to it digitally. I'm not going to judge how you listen to this record. But to start, I went to my wife again and I asked her to write me two poems. And the first poem I wanted to be in the vein of do not go gently into that good night, fighting against death, this kind of like desperation, this aggressive desperation to not die, to cling to life with every ounce that you have, with like this kind of manic energy. And the second poem, I wanted to be some sort of way, some sort of acceptance, some grace to accept that our own mortality is actually a beautiful thing so that we can be reabsorbed, which is where the album name comes from, back into this universal consciousness, back into God, back into whatever it is that your spirituality says happens when we're no longer occupying our vessel. And I'm going to read very quickly the two poems that my wife came up with that I based all the compositions on. So the first composition, the first side of the record, the aggressive poem is "Hit it as loudly as possible. Best case scenario, they'll mention the quiet when I'm gone," which is just great. I just love that poem. So I took that poem and I wrote the first composition based on the rhythm and the cadence of that poem, and of course, based on the essence of it. The second poem, the kind of acceptance, the grace poem, is "Released. Light moves inside a green leaf. Now I'm absorbed by green. bouncing the loop of light. So I named the first track Hit It As Loudly As Possible, because who can not name the song that when you have that lyric? And then the second poem inspired the second side of the record, the second song, which is called Loop of Light. Both songs are quite long. That's the idea, is to get into this sort of like a trance-like state listening to this music. And I'm going to play that first song for you. This is the aggressive, angry, grabbing onto life song that ends with a little bit of grace that leads into the second song. So if you like this music or anything that you heard, please go to johnarmstrongmusic.com. You can see all the stuff that I've done throughout my life. You can see all the different recordings that I've done, and you can check out the music that I've been a part of. It's just been an absolute pleasure to record as much, and I've been so fortunate in my career to have recorded with wonderful people and to continue to do that. And so, again, this is off my brand new release, released October 2nd, album, Reabsorb, which... is again, these two songs, Hit It As Loudly As Possible and Loop of Light. And you're going to hear Hit It As Loudly As Possible. And I'm just going to end the show on this song. So until next time, you can hear Don't Call It Jazz every first and last Saturday of the month at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, or you can check out the show on KISU.org. Many thanks to the sponsor, ISU Credit Union, to the show's editor, Ryan Tomlinson, and to everyone at KISU. Please enjoy Hit It As Loudly As Possible.